Welcome. You're listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast, the show that cuts through the fog of war and updates you about the ongoing conflict in Ukraine. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts.
Hello, I'm Marina Yevshan, co-host of the Russia-Ukraine War Report Podcast, and today is March the 8th, 2024. It has been 3,693 days since Russia started covert military operations in Crimea, 10 years and 17 days since the start of the Russia-Ukraine war, and 2 years and 14 days since Russia expanded its war of aggression. Today's podcast looks at events that happened on Thursday and Friday morning. During the podcast, you will find the Russia-Ukraine war map helpful to visualize the areas discussed. A link is in the podcast description. The Russia-Ukraine War Report is compiled by our team from around the world. Today's report includes information from our direct contacts and journalists in Ukraine, the Russian Ministry of Defense, the General Staff of the Armed Forces of Ukraine Morning Reports, operational commands north, south, and east of Ukraine, open-source intelligence, our in-house team of analysts and geospatial experts, and pro-Ukrainian and pro-Russian male bloggers and social media channels with a track record of trying to be accurate. We have one mission, the truth, because the truth matters. Here is the daily assessment. 1. Ukraine is stabilizing its defensive lines in the Avdiivka area of operation, with fighting continuing in the same 500 to 1500-meter wide strip. 2. We maintain that Ukraine's acute shortage of air defense missiles will become catastrophic by April. 3. While Russia holds the initiative throughout the theater of war, the ability to sustain intense combat operations in more than three areas of operation has culminated. 4. Ukraine has established strategic control of the Western and Central Black Sea after sinking or severely damaging 8 Russian warships in the last 8 months. 5. The United States has ended financial and military aid to Ukraine, unless there is an unforeseen event that changes congressional leadership before the 2024 elections. 6. Due to necessity, Ukraine has shifted to a Fabian strategy to wear down Russian combat power while conserving resources. 7. The Kremlin is preparing to complete the transformation of the governmental structure into a dictatorship, culminating after the results of the sham presidential elections are released. 8. While the possibility of an intentional nuclear accident caused by Russian occupiers at the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant remains low, the condition is more serious than what the International Atomic Energy Agency is reporting. 9. Russian-aligned assets have co-opted the ongoing Polish border blockade, which has become an open act of hybrid warfare against Ukraine and the Baltic states. We begin today's war report in Kharkiv and Luhansk oblasts, starting in the Kupiansk area of operation, also known as AO. Russian and Ukrainian sources reported continued fighting near Sinkivka, with no change in the situation. Russia continued indiscriminate attacks against civilian targets across Kharkiv oblast. Chuhuyev was hit by rockets striking a 9-story apartment building, retail stores, and a hotel. 2 people were killed and 2 more were wounded, including a child. The Russian VKS, that's the aerospace forces, hit Vovchansk with 3 Fab 500 UMPK glide bombs targeting civilian areas. 12 residential buildings were damaged and destroyed, killing 1 person. Grad rockets were fired into residential areas of Kupiansk, killing 2 civilians. In the Kremenayo of Luhansk Oblast, Russian forces continued offensive operations east of Terny and Yampolivka, with no changes in territorial control. In the Lysychanskyo, Russian forces made multiple attempts to advance into Bilohorivka from the east and southeast, without success. Moving south to the Donbas, we start in northeast Donetsk Oblast. In the Soledar AO, Russian forces attacked Rozdolivka using reconnaissance in force, suffered losses, and returned to their defensive positions. In the Bakhmut AO, heavy fighting continued in Ivanivska. The situation remains difficult for Ukrainian forces, but Russian troops didn't make additional advances. In the Klishivka area, intense positional fighting continued north and east of Klishivka and east of Andriivka. No changes. In southwest Donetsk Oblast, Russian troops were pushed back in the Avdiivka AO, signaling that Ukrainian forces had stabilized their current defensive lines. Almost 80% of the 70 ground attacks Russia initiated theater-wide were from Avdiivka to Orikhiv. The Russian VKS carried out 24 airstrikes across the same region. West of Avdiivka, fighting continued east of Berdychi, east of Semenivka, in the western part of Orlivka, and east of Tonenka. Russian forces were pushed out of Berdychi and Tonenka, although the situation remains fluid. Further south, Russian attempts to advance deeper into the eastern part of Pervomayske and toward the Ukrainian firebase at Nevelske continued without success. In the Vuhledar area, fighting continued south and east of Krasnohorivka. East of Georgievka, geolocated video showed that on the south bank of the reservoir, Ukrainian forces made marginal gains. Fighting continued on the edges of Pobeda, with Russian forces unable to break through Ukrainian defenses. A company of Russian mechanized infantry reached the southwestern tip of Novomikhailivka, but fell into a trap. The video our analyst geolocated shows the armored column withdrawing from the settlement on the road to Solotka. Russian troops start shooting south, east, and west, with the tanks attempting to traverse overland to the Russian-controlled farm to the east. The Russian unit became encircled and could not break out. 8 infantry fighting vehicles and 4 tanks were destroyed. We'll link to the video and more analysis in our daily situation report, and there is more information in the podcast description. The Russian Ministry of Defense claimed there was fighting east of Solotka, which could be this failed assault. In Zaporizhzhia Oblast, Russian forces restarted intense attacks in the Orikhiv AO. Heavy fighting was reported west of Verbove and south and southeast of Robotene, with Russian forces launching 16 separate attacks. At the time of publication, there were no territorial control changes. I want to give a shout out to the United States publication The Atlantic, which has an excellent story about the ZNPP, titled A Looming Disaster at the Zaporizhzhia Nuclear Power Plant, written by Operational Command South spokesperson Captain Natalia Humanyuk. You should give it a read. In northern and northeastern Ukraine, Russian forces continued indiscriminate attacks on civilians. In Chernihiv Oblast, Russian forces shelled the settlement of Semenivka with mortars, killing a 51-year-old man near his home. The victim was caught outside at the time of the attack, and neighbors found his body. The State Border Service of Ukraine stopped a Russian sabotage and reconnaissance squad from crossing the border into Sumy Oblast overnight. There were no reports of casualties from either combatant. Even more things were exploding in Russia. In Cherepovets in the Vologda region, a Ukrainian drone struck the Severstal steel plant. The UAV punched through the roof near one of the blast furnaces. Russian officials confirmed the strike, and this was the third Russian steel mill attacked in the last 30 days. In Moscow, partisans destroyed railroad infrastructure near the Golovkovo train station. The Crimean Tatar insurgent organization ATESH claimed responsibility for the attack. The foreign ministers of the United Kingdom, Germany, and the United States warned there was a high risk of a major terrorist attack in Moscow in the next 48 hours. They recommended that their citizens stay away from large gatherings and events such as concerts. It was an unusual warning, considering the ongoing Cold War. It is unclear if the warning was issued to get ahead of a potential false flag attack, or if there is a danger of a domestic or foreign terror attack. Shortly after the warnings, the Federal Security Service of Russia claimed it killed militants with the Islamic State who were planning a terror attack on a Moscow synagogue. Pictures showed 2 men who were killed, with Russia claiming the terror cell were members of the Afghan branch of the Islamic State. It is unclear if the events are related, and Russia frequently claims that security services have thwarted Islamic extremist violence with little to no evidence. Here is my theater-wide update. Russia launched 37 Shahed 136 one-way drones at the Kharkiv and Odessa regions, with 33 shot down. Russia has used 105 Sheheds in the first week of March, with most targeting Odessa. Nicholas O'Court, the senior military advisor of the British delegation to the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, said that Ukraine is destroying Russian aircraft faster than they can be replaced. Quote, "The constant destruction of military aircraft is a significant setback for the Russian military effort, given that due to sanctions, Russia barely produces more than a few dozen aircraft each year. And these reports of Russian aircraft downing suggest that Russia is losing aircraft 20 times faster than it can replace them." Unquote. In February, Ukraine claimed to have shot down 11 Su-34s and 4 Su-35 multi-role fighter aircraft, which has sparked a debate on the legitimacy of the claims. We had previously assessed that it was very likely that 15 aircraft had been hit, but equally likely that some of them were able to return to base. In March, there have been 2 days where the VKS carried out around 100 combat sorties, but the average has dropped to less than half of February, despite excellent weather conditions. An analysis of satellite images at Russian airfields suggests that at least 6 Su-34 aircraft have been lost, but it isn't conclusive. It is possible at the time the pictures were taken, the missing aircraft were flying missions. Russian airframe losses in 2023 have exceeded production, and there is growing evidence that commanders of the VKS have decided to take fewer chances. President of Ukraine Volodymyr Zelensky signed a decree that conditionally releases conscripts from the armed forces. For those who were conscripted in January 2022, their service was extended beyond their contracts because of the February 25th martial law declaration. Between April and May, they will be released from active duty and exempt from mobilization for 12 months. The Special Representative of China for Eurasia, Li Hui, was in Kyiv to discuss support and potential path for peace. During the meeting, the Chinese delegation was shown debris from North Korean KN-23 short-range ballistic missiles that Russia used in January and February. Li's Ukrainian counterparts discussed how Chinese parts are bypassing sanctions and being used in a number of weapons, including Shahed drones. President Zelensky appointed former commander-in-chief of the Ukrainian armed forces, General Valery Zaluzhny, to be the Ukrainian ambassador to the United Kingdom. Zaluzhny will need to be confirmed by London, but the development was widely seen as positive in political and diplomatic circles. The United States House of Representatives has launched an investigation into SpaceX and whether the company has done enough to restrict Russian access to Starlink internet terminals. A letter was sent requesting a report on complaints about the illegal acquisition of terminals and their use. The committee added that the unchecked use of Starlink terminals by nations such as Russia is a national security threat to the United States. President of France Emmanuel Macron reportedly said that French troops could be deployed to Ukraine if the situation deteriorated to the point that Russian troops were advancing on Kyiv or Odessa, declaring, when it comes to Ukraine, quote, "there are no red lines." After the meeting, French politicians talking to Le Figaro said Macron, quote, "essentially explained to us that if we support Ukraine and yet speak of limiting ourselves, Vladimir Putin is likely to succeed." Unquote. I don't know what's gotten into Macron, but I like it. The Kremlin was not amused, with spokesperson Dmitry Peskov saying, quote, "Mr. Macron is convinced of his policy of wanting to inflict a strategic defeat on our country, and he continues to increase the level of direct involvement of France." Unquote. Wait, did Peskov admit that Ukraine and France can strategically defeat Russia? The UK is ready to transfer frozen Russian assets to Ukraine in the form of a loan. Foreign Minister David Cameron said that the money would need to be returned in the future, but by Russia, which will be required to pay reparations for its expanded war of aggression. To be clear, this isn't about interest income profits. This is about handing over all frozen Russian assets held in UK banks. Norway announced it had joined the Air Defense Coalition of Ukraine. It's a significant development, as Norway co-developed the NASAMS air defense system with the US and can provide missiles while bypassing the US State Department and Congress. Germany and France co-chair the Air Defense Coalition. The UK announced it was allocating another $416 million to provide Ukraine with over 10,000 drones in 2024. Most will be first-person view UAVs, while 10,000 will be attack drones developed in the UK based on the lessons learned by Ukraine. Minister of Defense Grant Shapps said, quote, "I am stepping up our commitment to equip Ukraine with cutting-edge new drones coming directly from the UK's world-leading defense industry, straight from the factory to the front line." Unquote. The Ukraine Drone Coalition was created by Latvia and named the UK a co-chair. Ukraine received an undisclosed amount of 155mm artillery ammunition from Lithuania, and Norway announced it contributed $153 million to the Czech Republic's ammunition initiative. Several hours after Norway's announcement, the President of the Czech Republic, Petr Pavel, announced that 18 nations had fully funded the purchase of 800,000 artillery shells for Ukraine. The next step is for the member nations to sign a memorandum of understanding, and then the final purchase and transport of the artillery rounds can be arranged. President Pavel believes that the first batch of 155 and 122mm artillery rounds can arrive within weeks, saying, quote, "Now it will depend on the skill of our companies and the Ministry of Defense to speed up the whole process." Unquote. U.S. President Joe Biden started his annual State of the Union address speaking about continued support for Ukraine and targeting President Putin.
"If anybody in this room thinks Putin will stop at Ukraine, I assure you he will not." "If we stand with Ukraine and provide the weapons that needs to defend itself, that is all. That is all Ukraine is asking. They're not asking for American soldiers. In fact, there are no American soldiers at war in Ukraine, and I'm determined to keep it that way. But now, assistance to Ukraine is being blocked by those who want to walk away from our world leadership. It wasn't long ago when a Republican president named Ronald Reagan thundered, 'Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.'"
As the chamber applauded, and it was clear more than 218 people were giving a standing ovation, Speaker of the House Mike Johnson could not hide his disdain. That's not partisan. You can watch the video by yourself. Why did Johnson grimace and bite his lip? Before the State of the Union, Congressman Brian Fitzpatrick issued an ultimatum to Speaker Johnson that if he did not agree to put the Senate bill to a vote by today, he would start gathering signatures for a discharge petition. Fitzpatrick told reporters, quote, "The alternative can't be that Ukraine fails and our border remains open," and was confident he would gather more than the required 218 signatures. If the House Rules Committee allows a bypass, a vote could happen as early as next week, but it is more likely that anti-Ukrainian congresspersons will use procedures to delay a vote for 30 days. If the discharge petition fails, it is almost certain that Ukraine will not receive additional aid from the United States before January 2025, dependent on the outcome of national elections. time for another visit to the land of Mobix, Mobilization and Mir. The Russians have fielded a new drone that uses a fiber optic cable to receive control signals and send back video. The cable is over 10 kilometers long, and Ukrainian forces were able to capture one relatively intact. The design prevents interference from electronic warfare, and wire-guided weapons aren't unprecedented. The Embassy of India in Russia reported that 30-year-old Shri Mohammad Asfan was killed in Ukraine after being deceitively forced into the Russian Federation Armed Forces. According to the Foreign Ministry of India, in December 2023, Asfan paid $3,600 to a company promising him a security guard job in Russia. Instead, he was conscripted into the Russian army, given 15 days of training and sent to the front lines in Ukraine. Asfan's family has appealed to the Foreign Ministry of India to have his body returned. It's a particularly messy issue for Russia, which invested hundreds of millions of dollars in disinformation campaigns targeting Indian citizens. Spetsnaz Captain Alexei Ivanov, company commander of the 1st Company, 33rd Special Forces Sabotage and Reconnaissance Detachment, was killed in action on March the 6th by a drone-delivered IED. Normally, we don't report on the deaths of field-grade officers, but a Ukrainian drone captured the last moments of Ivanov's life. He is alone and starts to sprint on a trail in a tree line. Ivanov falls, possibly after being shot, and several seconds later, the drone drops a mortar that explodes less than 5 meters away. He stands again and starts to jog, but Ivanov is already mortally wounded, his pants becoming stained bright red. He falls to the ground and bleeds out, alone. The only sound is his last breath and the drone that ended his life hovering above. He came here to kill Ukrainians. He fought for an authoritarian regime that never cared about him, and that filled his head with lies about biolabs, combat mosquitoes, denazification, and how Ukraine and NATO are poised to attack and destroy Russia. All lies. And that's what we know. Join me again on Monday, and to all our listeners who support equal rights and healthy society, happy International Women's Day! Your support of my home, Ukraine, helps us make history and protect the future for all.
You've been listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast. To help keep us independent, please consider providing financial support by becoming a patron. Want on-demand news in your hand? Download the Google News app and make Malcontent News one of your favorites to receive breaking news updates. Thank you for listening.